live from J-Bar M Barbecue for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brett.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Joe George, assistant to the regional manager behind the glass. We are broadcasting live at J-Bar M. This is the spot you got to be. We know that you don't want to be at work on a Friday, especially afternoon. So leave work early. Come out here to J-Bar M. It's fantastic. Great happy hour specials. The food is tremendous. Hoffy's hooking me up right now with some food. I see a big pretzel. Always like very big pretzels. It's a toasted pretzel. That looks very good. And also, what is this guy right here? It's got some brisket on it. Brisket deviled eggs. Brisket deviled eggs, which I love deviled eggs. I love brisket. I stole one of Paulie's brisket breakfast tacos earlier, by the way, Blankers.
Mm-hmm.
Best brisket breakfast taco I've ever had in my life. It was fantastic.
Well, I am very jealous that I am not there, and I wish I could be, but I appreciate the fact
Andrew
that
Andrew loves it because you get his, he gets your lunch.
Who is Hoffy that's going to get you this stuff?
He is a humongous man that I would not want to cross in the alley.
Okay.
He's the kind of guy that I want on my side, but he's taking care of us. We're outside of J-Bar M2, which I love being outside. One of my favorite like pleasures of broadcasting
is working with me daily.
It's very simple. It's actually doing a show with my sunglasses on. There's nothing I enjoy more than that for whatever reason. I know that's very minor. I know it's trivial. I know no one cares. But I enjoy it. It makes me feel happy.
Well, you know,
a smile on my face, Blankers.
Those people with their future so bright that they have to wear shades. You are one of those guys. You do enjoy wearing your sunglasses. I do know this.
AC's got his sunglasses on too.
Well, that's shocking. Did you hear any of the Paul Gallant show?
I listened to most of it. Yes.
Did you hear him reference a quote unquote caller during the 12:45 hour yesterday of the Killer Bees, which he happened to be listening to? Who called Lance McCullers soft and made of glass.
He is both of those things.
And then he proceeded to just kill the quote-unquote caller who would call him that and how ridiculous a notion that was. And
I missed that. So Paul doesn't think that Lance is soft?
No, and he says that genetically injuries happen and you can't blame it on the said player. Then he proceeded to say, and let's face it, no offense to all of my colleagues in sports radio and or media, but you're all fat bleeps. And
well,
if I can put my head on your tummy and it feels like a pillow, you have no grounds to talk. I'm going, I'm pretty sure that wanted to call her.
I've had a herniated disc for a month that I haven't really told anybody about, so I'm playing through injury. So I don't know if that – now, Paul is right about being a little bit, you know, soft in the middle now. Now, whenever I call Lance soft, it's not really about the injuries. It's not so much about the injuries. It's about that he complains about the size of the mound and how if there's a speckle of dirt on the rubber the wrong way, he can't pitch to his best, like, capability. So it's more than just the injuries for Lance McCullers. Like, he walks around the mound, looks at his fingernails. They got to be the perfect length. His hair is going to be in the right spot before he delivers a pitch. That's why I think Lance McCullers is soft. It's not so much the injuries. And I do think Yordan's soft because he ends up in an Atlanta hospital bed for smoke in left field and then is in the dugout the next day. So it's not so much the injuries. It's more the other stuff in association.
It's the big picture is what you're saying?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Okay.
Let's go with that.
All right.
Big picture. Anyways, Astros lost yesterday. The opening day streak, I feel bad because I wanted to forget about the Boston Bean Eaters forever.
Yeah.
And they still have this record, right? 10 consecutive opening day victories. Astros and Bean Eaters look like forever. They'll be tied at the top of that list. But two things happened in yesterday's game. And look, we're not going to sit here and go hot take Astros season. Uh-oh, here we go. There's a couple of trends, though, that I hope don't continue. Because, look, it's one game. It's one of 62. It's a marathon season. It's not a sprint. Dylan Cease was phenomenal. I was looking to see if I could get some Dylan Cease Cy Young odds today, actually, because that dude is nasty.
Was
he was the runner-up
in
the Cy Young last year. Like, this isn't anything new. Dylan Cease is a filthy animal. But a couple of trends that I noticed in that game that I'm going to be paying close attention to. I'm not concerned about it yet. I'm not going to sit here and say, well, the Astros' 2023 season's just not going to be very good. The season is over. Break them up. Trade everybody. I'm not going to do any of that stupid stuff. but a couple of trends that I hope don't continue throughout the rest of the season. We'll go one at a time. The first one is one that we've been talking about all offseason. It's the depth of this team. And if you look at the Astros' bottom of the order yesterday, look, you don't even have to look at the bottom of the order. Look, 6, 7, 8, 9 blinkers. Yiner Diaz, look, again, he's a prospect. We think he's going to hit at this level. When has Yiner Diaz hit as a big leaguer? Never.
Yeah,
we don't know.
No, really, yeah. And, and he's front and center in some pretty big spots last night.
Yeah, bases loaded late in the game.
Yep.
Chance to kind of break that game open. Punched out. It was 0 for 4 with a couple of strikeouts. And look, I don't want to sit here and go one game, 0 for 4, bench the guy. Nothing like that. But when you look at the Astros lineup 6, 7, 8, 9 yesterday, and you're running out a rookie, Yiner Diaz, Jake Myers, who was disappointing last year, Martin Maldonado, who was sub Mendoza line a year ago and batting 8th, over Mauricio Dubon, where if he hits above the Mendoza line, I think a lot of people would be happy. I look back at last year's postseason too, Blankers. Like, we act like injuries don't happen in sports. We look at the Astros starting 9 because a lot of people right now are saying, well, they're out Jose Altuve for 2 months. He'll be back. Well, they're without Michael Brantley. He's going to be back in 3 weeks. It's what Dana Brown told us. The Astros last year in the postseason were playing without 2 starters from what they thought would be at opening day. They were playing without Michael Brantley last year in the playoffs. And they thought that Jake Myers was going to be their center fielder in the postseason. They were really playing without him too because he was terrible in 2022. So the Astros right now are playing without 2 starters. They're playing without Brantley. They're playing without Jose Altuve. That's the norm in sports. A lot of times we fail to realize that, but it's the norm in sports for people to get hurt. I don't want the trend of the Houston Astros' depth being a concern all season long, and this isn't something that we're pointed to late March. This is something we were talking about last December.
Yeah, no, look, and the thing is that You had to at least do some forward thinking. It didn't have to be that you were trying to make any kind of moves that were going to be long-term in terms of lingering, contracts, other things. But you had to at least kind of have some forward thinking to say, just in case and or for depth of this team, you don't expect injuries, but let's be honest. They happen more frequently than more people would like to admit. And in the case of the Houston Astros, it's really the one thing that could derail an otherwise really set up team pitching, hitting, and defensive-wise for the long haul. So they had money to spend. It wasn't like they had to do something creatively, financially, to try and make space, to try and make something happen. They had the resources and the means. They knew that they were saving money with Verlander. They knew that everybody else was pretty much in place once they got Abreu. And they could have done one or two things to kind of help. I think part of it was they were stuck in the middle of the emotions of Yuli Gurriel and wondering, how many feathers they were going to ruffle fan-wise and otherwise, and did they really need Yuli, or were they really okay with walking away from him? But the market,
I think that was more fan-based than anything else, though.
Well, the fans were driving it, but I think it was all, you might be right, it was also partly driven in the fact that you didn't have a general manager, you had Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson.
I mean, Yuli said that the Astros never offered him anything. And look, the Astros did hire a general manager late in the game, February 1st. But Yuli Gurriel was a free agent up until 2 weeks ago. And I'm not sitting here proposing Yuli Gurriel either, because I personally, Yuli Gurriel wouldn't have been that bench piece for me, because he's somebody that I think can only play first base at this stage of his career, can only DH at this stage of his career, and he's coming off a terrible offensive season. Yuli Gurriel wasn't that player for me, because a lot of people, when we bring up this conversation and brought up this conversation in the past, well, the Astros didn't have a GM. How could you expect him to do anything? Well, he signed Christian Javier to an extension, and Jurickson Profar, who was my top utility guy, didn't sign until a week ago. He had plenty of time to make a move for a utility type of player. And again, this is one of 162. I still think the Astros are a playoff team. I still think that they're going to win the AL West. This is just one of two trends that I noticed yesterday that I'm like, you know what, I hope that this trend doesn't still, show its ugly face on June 15th. I hope this ugly trend still isn't sticking around in late August, because this has been the one kind of constant fear I've had with this team, is that the depth of this offense isn't all that good. Yeah, 1 through 9, is their offense better? Yeah, 1 through 9, their offense is better on paper than it was a year ago, signing Abreu, who had a really good year. Whenever Jose Altuve is healthy, still one of the best second basemen in all of baseball. Michael Brantley. Now, what is Michael Brantley? I don't know. He's in his late 30s coming off of major shoulder surgery. Is it fair to think he's going to hit 300? Probably not. But 1 through 9, this offense is better. The problem is you never get to the postseason with all 9. Usually you have 7. Maybe if you're lucky, you have 8. And the way that this team is built, Blankers, whenever you have two starters out, currently the Astros have Altuve and Brantley out, their 6, 7, 8, 9 is Diaz, Myers, Maldonado, and Dubon. And like people are saying, well, Hensley would start over Dubon. Okay, he's a rookie as well with 30-something at-bats. Well, Chaz McCormick would start over Jake Myers. Chaz McCormick is a fourth outfielder. So, like, that doesn't really improve the bottom of the order either. The depth of this Astros team, again, not a worry, not a concern. It's a trend that I hope doesn't continue to cost this team.
No, not only that, but Jeremy, look, they see more than we do what we saw again yesterday, which is Jake Myers looks absolutely like half the man he used to be when he first got called up to the big leagues. And he looks completely lost, and he looks like he's lost everything that he had that made James Click talk about him as the center fielder of the future. And then you take these young kids that no matter how much everybody believes that, hey, in small sample sizes in the case of Hensley, or just the fact that you hear everything that you hear about Jiner Diaz and the fact that he is such a stick, it's going to take a while. We saw Alex Bregman struggle when he first got called up to the big leagues. When you get these first opportunities, you're not going to just pick up where you left off in the minor leagues or in spring training, and you're just going to immediately start ripping the cover off of it. And that's something that they had to take into consideration, which they clearly didn't. And, you know, we'll get into some of the other things after the break, but that's the biggest concern I have, is that the one thing that you can do is get complacent and just sit there and go, we're good enough as is. And then you get caught kind of with your pants down looking at what you just said with the roster, with injuries, and going, you could have already prepared for this. Now, what are you going to do? Or are you just going to hope this all works out for the next 2 months?
And I just think a good general manager plans for that. A good general manager plans that, okay, we're going to have 25% of our roster go down because of injury at some point. That's why Aledmys Diaz was such a critical piece of this Astros team, because he could start 80 games and you don't feel like you're losing a lot. Now you're looking at Mauricio Dubon. That's why Marwin Gonzalez was so important to this team. He could start 110 games, lead you in RBIs the year that you win the championship, and you're not losing a lot. All of a sudden, you take a drop-off from Jose Altuve to Mauricio Dubon, and it's like, oh, my goodness. And look, David Hensley's a better hitter than Mauricio Dubon, but Altuve to Hensley is still a significant drop, where in the past, Aledmys Diaz getting a spot start for a Bregman because of a hammy, Marwin Gonzalez starting a game at shortstop or whatever he's starting, could play everywhere, doesn't cost you as much. And I look at this bench, and it is something. It's a trend that I hope we're not talking about in the middle of July. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. One other trend that I hope we don't continue to talk about kind of showed up yesterday as well. We're at J Bar M. Come swing on by, hang out with us. The food is fantastic. The drinks are flowing. Great spot to come whenever you're looking for a place to leave work. Take an extended lunch break on this Friday, or if you're headed out to Fan Fest for March Madness a little bit later, this is your pregame spot. If you're headed to the Astros' second game of the season, this is your pregame spot just a few blocks away from downtown. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Live from J Bar M Barbecue for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasting live from J Bar M in Edo, this is the spot to be. It feels great out here. The food is terrific. The drinks are very good. Perfect pregame spot if you're headed to the Astros, headed to some NCAA Fan Fest a little bit later today. It's a good spot if you're looking to leave work a little bit early. Come on out, hang out with us here at J Bar M. We're outside the patio area, and it is fantastic. All right, a couple people weighed in on what we had to say. Clutch City, look, this isn't picking on Diaz for one game. I don't care about the one game. This isn't picking on Myers or Dubon, although Myers and Dubon had the two hardest hit balls off of Dylan Cease yesterday. But Clutch City says Myers still looks scared in the box. Jake Myers hit a ball 400 feet yesterday. So I'm not really interested in the Jake Myers, Chaz McCormick, who should be playing more than not. I know that Jake was 0-for. I know he didn't make a very good play on that first and third when he got deked, I thought, by Elvis Andrews. But he hit a ball 400 feet. Like, I'm not going to sit here and crush Jake Myers for his offensive performance yesterday.
No, look, you don't have to. And I'm not here to do that now, but I still think he looked like a deer in the headlights on a lot of pitches. But my bigger concern was him in the outfield. I said what I said about him not deserving to start opening day, and I don't care if Dusty said it was because Cease's fastball he thought would have been too much for Chaz. Chaz deserved to start yesterday. He should have started yesterday. we'll let everything else work itself out. But to continue to put Jake Meyers in spots and then trust his defense when whether you think that you're going to, because of a ground ball pitcher, you don't need someone in center field as much, but Jake's supposed to be your best defensive center fielder. And to me, he looked like a guy that didn't have much of an arm. He looked like that when he charged a ball and a ball was right in front of him. Oh, the announcer said he was flat-footed. That's why he didn't make the throw to third base. But even when he makes throws, they look like a limp noodle. And I just have zero confidence right now that he has zero confidence coming back from the injuries that he had earlier in the last year and a half.
I mean, he squared up that ball, hit it 400 feet, though. Like, let's not get 0-for-4 in the box score confused with the dude absolutely crushed on the ball. And I'm not going to sit here and stand on the table for Jake Meyers, but let's not pretend because he was 0-for-4, he was lost.
I didn't even mention the 0-for-4. I'm just saying what he looks like.
Hardest hit, furthest hit baseball. Yeah, but how did he look on that pitch? Like, a lot of people looked fooled by Dylan Cease yesterday. He struck out more at dudes on opening
But I even said, Jeremy, I'm not even concerned as much about the offense last night. Same. Defensively, he just doesn't look right out there.
I thought he was more deked than anything else on that play by Andrews. He kind of, like, coasted in. And, look, it's not an excuse. I thought it was a lack of hustle and a lack of urgency for Jake Meyers on that specific play. But he thought that Elvis Andrews was going to coast into second base. He was on his heels. I thought it was a very lazy play, to be honest with you. So I'm not going to, again, advocate for Jake Meyers. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 5856 Blinker says, Yiner and Dubon got to go, bro. Look, here's the thing. Yiner Diaz, while Brantley's gone, is going to get a lot of at-bats, especially in the DH spot when Jordan's playing left field. There is a role for Yiner Diaz on this team. I think that there's a role for Yiner Diaz to be starting a lot for this team while Michael Brantley is out. Is it hitting in the sixth spot protecting Kyle Tucker? I would say no. I don't mind Mauricio Dubon on the 26-man roster. I think Mauricio Dubon is a good guy to have on your bench. He can play literally every single position except for catcher. So I think there's guys like that that are valuable to a team. Should they start 80 games? No. So, like, that's kind of the point about my depth. I'm fine with Yiner and Dubon on this roster. I don't love that Yiner's hitting sixth behind Kyle Tucker, and I don't love that Mauricio Dubon's probably going to play 40% of the games at second base until Jose Altuve is back.
Here's my feeling on both, okay? You're right. In my opinion, the versatility of a Mauricio Dubon can be a huge advantage to a team because he can play outfield, he can play infield, he can play multiple positions. But I only need to see him on spot duty filling in for guys on their days off. It's a totally different story when you're expecting him to take a majority, half, a good number of starts because of Altuve's injury, and know that offensively you just aren't going to probably get a whole hell of a lot. Now, he made a great relay throw last night. I'll give him that. But overall, he's a great utility that can play both positions and the bench guy. I don't like it when you're facing 2 months without Altuve and there's a huge consideration for him to get a good portion of that time. In terms of Diaz, you can't close the door on this kid so quickly because everybody that you talk to, everything that you hear and everything that you see is he is a stick. He can hit. They were talking about the guy that was the young bat coming up for the White Sox, and they said this is Houston's version of that. You don't know what position he can play defensively yet that really he can settle into. You've heard catcher. They've experimented with him in other positions, but you do know he can hit, and there's always a place for a bat. It's just it's tough when he came up in the situations he came up in last night, and everybody's expecting, oh, this is the kid. He's going to do it. It doesn't happen like Jeremy Peña every year for rookies coming up into this league, and he's going to take some lumps and have to really adjust to major league pitching.
Here's the difference, though, with Peña and Diaz. Where did Peña hit, like, last year early in the year?
Six, until, seven.
More like eighth, like
okay.
Seventh or eighth.
Well, bottom of the lineup. How about that?
Yeah. He wasn't protecting Kyle Tucker.
No.
Like, that's my thing. Like, I'm cool if Diaz starts almost every game while Brantley's gone. Like, let's figure out who Yiner Diaz is. Let's figure that out. But whenever he's providing the protection to maybe your second-best offensive player, Kyle Tucker's going to see nothing. That's why in that situation yesterday, Kyle Tucker got, like, nothing to hit at all. And, like, it was a spot where you're supposed to be pitching to Kyle Tucker. But why didn't they? Because they didn't fear Yiner Diaz whatsoever. And I don't love that for a rookie. Like, as an unknown offensive player in Major League Baseball, I don't love him batting behind Kyle Tucker. But that speaks to the Astros' depth of where they're at. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. 1509, do y'all think Papa is being pushed a la James Click style to play Jake over Chazzy?
No. I don't, because I don't think Dusty allows anybody to push him around. And, you know, now that they've pushed out the general manager that he didn't always see eye to eye with, I don't think that you know, anybody's pushing anybody. I think that Dusty obviously has his favorites. I really don't buy what he said, and I don't like what he did to Chaz yesterday, but I trust that at the end of the day, you know, you can't argue with what Dusty's been able to do, the results he's been able to get. You can question it. We can talk about it. But Dusty's going to Dusty. And if that was one of them, I call BS on that one more so than a lot of the other ones. But I also know in the long haul, they'll be just fine.
I don't think it's I think because of it's being Chaz McCormick, I don't think that that's what's going on. Now, I think that the front office and Dana Brown are feeding Dusty Baker with, you know, advanced analytics and things like that. They might be trying to, you know, usher Dusty Baker a certain way, but Dusty Baker has the lineup. Like, Dusty Baker is not going to be bullied into somebody else filling out his lineup for him, and especially because it's Chaz. Like, Dusty Baker tries whatever he can do to avoid playing Chaz McCormick. Like, the only time he feels like he has to play Chaz McCormick is almost when he feels like he has no other alternative. Last year, he was playing Mauricio Dubon in center field and giving Chaz McCormick no starts in center after they brought up Jake Meyer. So I still think that there is a Dusty Baker bias against Chaz McCormick, to be honest with you.
I don't disagree with that. I believe that there probably is. I don't understand why. And it would be one thing if you're a manager and you know that the front office or other people have grown to like a certain player and then they just don't perform and you don't get it, you don't understand, and you don't feel like you should be forced to play a player that can't play. But he stepped up for you last year. He did everything that you asked him to do. Maybe some would say more. He did it defensively. He came up with timely hits. And I just feel like if you're the manager and you've seen that, you don't have to like him and go have beers with him after a game, but you have to respect the fact that when you put him in the lineup, he does what you need him to do, and therefore that should take precedent.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. What'd you think about Yordan's hands? It seemed okay, huh?
Yeah, they sure did, especially when he did what he did in the ninth inning. I mean, look, all night I don't think that I was deeply concerned about Yordan Alvarez's hands, and like you said, he was facing filthy stuff in Dylan Cease, so I'm not going to sit there and hyperanalyze too much the breaking pitches or what he swung and didn't swing at, but he did what he was supposed to do. I mean, if you're Aaron Judge and you do something like that, I mean, you're going to be talked about as the home run champ and an MVP already, but, you know, he looked fine. He looked good, and I was pleased with that. So there was a lot to be pleased with. I know it was just one game last night, but there's other things that, you know, and we already talked about some of them, that just, you know, strike you and go, I'm not sure I feel so good about that. So shake it off. You faced a Cy Young candidate that's really, really good, and you actually were in control of the game going into the eighth inning. So, you know, you just get ready to play tonight, and hopefully you change the tide and you get your first W.
Yeah, if I was a White Sox fan and you had Reynaldo Lopez throwing 101 mile per hour gas, I'm not sure why you try to mix that slider in against Jordan Alvarez, who absolutely destroyed it.
Prove you can hit it, and I'll change it up. But until then, yeah, until further notice, here it comes.
Yeah, I thought that was silly of him to throw that slider, and Jordan just abused it. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live at JBRM. Still munching on this toasted pretzel, these pickled deviled eggs, cougar paw as well. A perfect spot to spend your Friday afternoon, whether you're just looking for a spot to hang out, have some good food, have some good drink, whether you're headed to downtown later, and this is your pregame spot as well. JBRM and Edo, the spot to be. We'll be here until 3, of course, and the Wheelhouse will be here until 7 o'clock. All right, I got another trend that I hope we don't continue to see for the Houston Astros. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from JBRM Barbecue. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Another trend, Blankers. Killer Bees here at JBRM. Edo, fantastic.
Whoa. Before you get into the next segment, I have to ask you a question, okay? You're a fairly rationally thinking man sometimes, right?
But it depends on who you ask.
Yeah, but you prioritize your responsibilities and your job and jobs and those that basically take care of you and sign your checks, right? So I'm going to give you just options, and I just want to see how you're going to answer, okay? So let's just say, hypothetically, you are the assistant to the regional general manager of Company A, okay? And your main...
Should we go Company G?
Okay, let's go Company G. Company G has given you a pretty good title. They take care of you financially with an insurance and everything else. And they say that one of your main responsibilities is to participate and stay with your extreme extreme job duties from noon to three every day, right?
Right.
But then let's just say that someone calls you and says, hey, I'm really intrigued by what you do and where you work. I'd love to stop by sometime and get a tour so you could show me how everything works at Company G and the things that go on. And you say, oh, yeah, that would be fantastic. Why don't you come down between noon and three any weekday, and I'd be happy to show you around.
Was I given the option of time, or was it forced upon me?
There is no time limit on this. You can take however much time you need, and you can.
I'm saying, did somebody else dictate the time, or did I choose the time?
No. Basically, chose the time, and said I would be happy and would love to be your tour guide and show you around. And we're in no hurry. We can take as much time as you need. Because with that being said, Sean Mapes is behind the glass right now, working the killer bees as we continue with the show.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Sean. It's great to have you. Thanks for pulling double duty for our assistant
nice to have
to the
a
regional manager,
producer.
Joe George, who's wearing one of his other hats during 12 to 3 hours of the killer bees. But at least we traded off bad hair for good hair. At least we got some phenomenal hair now in the production room.
Both wearing Astros hats, but yes, one has well-coiffed.
Yeah, you can still see Sean's lettuce.
Sean has well-coiffed lettuce as opposed to someone that desperately needs Doc Linville hiding under a gray Astros hat.
Yeah, it would be a good little testimonial there.
Oh, I'm working on it. Believe me.
I see. I just saw a dude wearing a Miami shirt, and my heart broke a little bit.
Ouch.
My heart broke a little bit. Anyways, one of the other trends that I saw yesterday, Blanker, 713-780-3776, J-Bar M and Edo, great food, great drinks, great times. Get on out here right now. One of the trends, and again, look, one of 162, we're not going to sit here and say the sky is falling. We still think the Astros are a very good baseball team, obviously. One game's not going to change that. They ran into a Dylan Cease, who was the second-place finisher in the American League Cy Young last year, and I think has a decent chance to win one before his career is all said and done. One of the other trends, though, that I hope we're not talking about in the middle of July, because the Astros were phenomenal in this area last year. They were phenomenal in this area in the postseason. The Astros were winning that game 2-1 entering the eighth inning. White Sox scored one on Montero. Lucky it wasn't two. Bad base running by Moncada to get thrown out at third base. And then the two runs in the ninth inning off of Ryan Stressly. I hope this isn't a trend, Blankers, because last year when the Astros had a lead entering the eighth inning, they were nearly undefeated. They were unbelievable. They could not be beat. Game one of 162 had the lead entering the eighth, and they have an L in the loss column coming into play today.
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy. I had concerns, as you know, not only from a financial standpoint, but just because Montero has never been the guy that he became last year, and then you overpaid him, and I still had serious concerns about, other than a plus-plus fastball, his ability to get guys out with those other pitches and consistently keep doing what he's been doing. Obviously, Jim Crane, with no James Click in the picture, decided this was the first move he wanted to make, and he committed to him. I just have serious reservations, and again, before I make him this year's version of my Brian Abreu, where I'm going to be hypercritical of him, I just need to tell you that I still have – I just feel really queasy about the fact that expectations are going to be super high for this guy, and I think it's going to be very hard for him to try and come close to what he did a year ago. Yesterday was not a good first step out of the box for him. Hopefully it's correctable, it's changed, or it's just one of those things. From a Pressly perspective, it's a little more concerning to me because of two factors. One, he played in the WBC, and he was the closer. And so you would think he's a little bit more advanced with his stuff and a little sharper, but he didn't look really sharp last night. And then even Roger Clemens on the telecast kept pointing out, not something he normally does, but he keeps shaking his arm and he keeps feeling, trying to think like he's.
I thought he did that pretty regularly.
He was doing it a lot last night. I hope
it didn't look great.
Much to do about nothing, but it seemed like with the amount of frequency he was doing it, that something wasn't feeling great for him. But those are concerns to me. Do you have guys that could fill those roles? And particularly, we saw what Abreu could do last year in the playoffs. Could he be your guy if you needed him? Sure. But Ryan Pressly is your guy that's battle-tested, that was lights out last year in the playoffs, that you want and need because of all the injuries you already have, and you don't want another one, especially as an important of a role as the closer is.
Just a trend, not overreacting to one game.
I'm saying it's my own personal gut feeling as it relates to Montero for the year. I'm still not going to be worried about Pressly tonight or whenever he pitches next.
I think that from your perspective, from like the numbers sides of things, I would agree with Montero. Like, he's had one really good year in his entire career. Now, it's almost like when we talk about Levis. Like, why was he not good prior to that? Is it because he had excuses or because there was actual tangible reasons? I think that there was actual real tangible reasons why Montero took so long to break out in his career. And personally, maybe it's more eye test because the numbers would support you. The numbers would back you up. I'm not denying that whatsoever. I love his arsenal. I love his repertoire. You know, the fastball that he can get up to mid to high 80s. He's a four-pitch reliever, which you don't see very often, and gets you out a multitude of ways. I test for me, I like Rafael Montero. The numbers would back you up. I want to ask you the question. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. And look, probably all overreacting a bit to game one. It'd be a lot different if it was game 48 of 162. But which bullpen arm do you trust the most? You had to get three outs, most critical, high-leverage situation that there is. Who do you trust more right now in the Houston Astros bullpen to get those three outs?
You're asking me. Look,
I'm asking everybody, but you can answer first. Age before beauty.
I mean, I still think that it's Ryan Pressly. I still think that, just like I said, the battle-tested resume that Ryan Pressly puts with pelts on the walls, Ryan Pressly's my answer. And Ryan Pressly's the guy that, in that role that he plays, you should have that much confidence in. And I'm not going to lose any sleep over last night. My biggest concern was the fact that he kept shaking his arm, because you know what? You're going to have hiccups along the way. Even the best closers are going to have times when they give up a run or two and they're just not their top-notch A-game self. But when I looked at that, that was concerning to me. But if I'm looking at a situation where I need a guy to come in, and he did it on the biggest stage last year, if I need a guy to come in and get three outs for me and do what he needs to get done, I'm taking Ryan Pressly.
For me, it's Brian Abreu, and it's not even really close. I think Brian Abreu right now is the most dominant reliever that the Houston Astros have. I think he has by far the best stuff. The concerns that we've had about Brian Abreu in the past were valid at the time. I don't think that they are anymore. Like, Abreu doesn't have command issues anymore. Abreu doesn't shrink in like high leverage moments. I think Brian Abreu is the best Astros reliever. He is the one that I trust the most in high leverage critical spots. 1106 says Abreu needs to be the closer, but if Dusty won't do it, at least make him the setup guy. See, I'm also not saying change roles. Like, that, it's ridiculous one game into the year. I'm not saying change roles. It's just a fun hypothetical question.
Yeah.
Which reliever do you trust most to get three outs in a high leverage spot right now? For me, it's Brian Abreu. I don't even think it's that close.
It's close to me because I still want to see him in those pressure cookers, locate his off-speed pitches. And to your point, as it related to the White Sox closer last night, rely on the pitch that's gotten him there. You know, and don't settle, but make sure you have full command no matter how stressful the situation is. But other than that, look, I was on his ass all last year, and then all of a sudden, you know, and you were the guy that was defending him and giving me the numbers to back it up. But in the postseason, he impressed the hell out of me. And all of a sudden, I didn't even know where it came from that suddenly he got elevated to a point where he was being put deeper into games, but he did everything he was supposed to do. So I totally understand where you're coming from. I'd like to see a little bit more of the pressure situations and him getting out of them, because that's where I think I lean Pressly, because stuff-wise, I mean, no question with that fastball, Abreu's top of the charts. But Pressly, in terms of the resume of been there, done that, and gotten out of it, that's why I would lean that way.
Yeah, most people on the text line are saying Pressly. One guy said, actually, the Twitchers like Abreu. So you get a war between the Texters and the Twitchers.
Shocker.
Again. One guy said Ryan Stanek, which was, it's interesting. Ryan Stanek has the best ERA for any reliever in Houston Astro history. It was interesting that game worked out yesterday the way that it did, because Dusty Baker tipped his hand on his pecking order of how it's going to be entering the season. Presley's his top dude. Montero's his second guy, the setup, if you will. Hector Neris had the seventh inning, so he's your third guy. And then they went to Brian Abreu in that spot, not Ryan Stanek. So I thought Dusty Baker actually tipped his hand on what the pecking order is for the Houston Astros. And Ryan Stanek is in the same role that he was last year in the playoffs when he got demoted and Jose Abreu got promoted.
I mean, is he like Mr. Goodwrench, where you're just going to use him wherever you need a tool, and or if one of those guys needs
he's your fifth most important reliever.
Yeah.
He's your fifth most important reliever. And Dusty Baker proved that yesterday, which I'm okay with. I mean,
look,
I really am.
I think a lot of what I nitpick about Montero that I'm concerned about is the same reason why you could say you have concerns about Ryan Stanek, because he's got a plus-plus fastball, but if that split finger ain't working and he can't locate it, he can have real control issues, and it could be a real problem for this team. So a lot of this is going to be based on Pawpaw's gut feelings, and if he has the gut feelings that, you know, he trusts those other guys more than Stanek, who am I to argue with him right now? And based on what he did last year in the playoffs and it worked, who are you to argue with him because of the fact that past precedent says that's the way to go?
Yeah, he tipped his hand yesterday, which I don't think he was necessarily hiding his hand. But Abreu's higher on the pecking order than Ryan Stanek, much like it was last year in the playoffs. 3-2-6-0 rather on the HRMP listener line. So just to clarify, Astros did not have the lead going into the eighth. Astros scored a run in the seventh inning yesterday. It was the first run of the game. Then in the eighth inning, Yasmani Grandal hit the home run to tie it. In the eighth inning, so going into the eighth, the Astros were up 1-0. And then the White Sox scored two in the ninth. Yordan hit the solo home run in the ninth. So technically, yeah, the Astros were leading going
into I don't understand how that's even an argument.
7-1-3, it's a fact. It's not an opinion. It's a fact.
Hey, 7-1-3. Guess who's back, by the way?
Joe George?
Yeah. Holy cow. A guest appearance by the ever-popular Joe George. He's here.
That's great. I'm great. I'm so happy to hear that. I didn't even notice his absence. In fact, I thought that the last 10 minutes were our best 10 minutes we've had all week.
Extremely solid, well polished, produced well too.
Yeah, I think that I think Sean Mapes has a future as being the regional manager.
Oh, good call.
713-780-3776. Which reliever do you trust the most? Not necessarily saying who do you want to be the closer, but you had to put your life on the line. Which Astro reliever is getting three outs and not surrendering a run? 713-780-3776. Also, the McNairs, Cal and Hannah. They did a Q&A out at the owners' meetings. I actually listened to the podcast that they had with Rock and Roll Mark Vandermeer today. It's always great listening to the McNairs. But I noticed some contradictions between Cal and Hannah. It's the Killer Bees broadcasting live from J-Bar M in Edo on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Turn down for what?
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from J-Bar M Barbecue. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
J-Bar M is fantastic. This is my kind of spot. Over here on Edo, you can see the skyline to my right on the patio area. The one thing that I enjoy more than anything else, whenever I have a chance to kind of put my feet up, do something that I enjoy to do, kind of have some free time, you know what I enjoy doing? I enjoy chilling. I enjoy, like, hanging out, having a cold drink. Most of the time it's Gin or Ben, having some really good food and just enjoying the company, just enjoying the setting. And this is my kind of spot. This spot is perfect. The food is phenomenal. Their barbecue is elite. Every drink you can think of. We've already had the brisket deviled eggs. We had the giant toasted pretzel, which is very good. Sausage corn dogs coming up here in a little bit. And then the Blankers, they're bringing me out some chicken wings. You know how I'm a chicken wing aficionado.
Yeah, you're a big wing guy. Yep.
I know I'm a savant when it comes to the art of a buffalo wing. And I'm going to try the one here at J-Bar M coming up a little bit later. But a great spot to hang out on a Friday afternoon, drink specials, happy hour, and then your pregame spot for the college basketball stuff going on around here, and then game two of the Astros season coming up later today as well.
Can I give before we get off the bullpen topic, though, I got to give Naris some credit last night because, you know, even Clemens was saying, look, that was a magician right there, the fact that you just got gifted and he just got out of that spot to keep that game scoreless last night. Yeah, Bregman gets some honorable mention for the play he made instead of trying to turn two and going home to get the out. But Naris still had to get two outs, and the strikeout, and then I believe it was the pop-up, to get out of that inning. He gets a gold star for me last night in the fact that he was able to keep that game even.
He also got himself into that spot, though.
He did.
Like,
he did.
We give flowers to Naris. We don't give flowers to Presley. And Naris made the pitches when he had to. Presley didn't. They both gave up two hits in one inning.
No, that's fair too, but I'm saying that in order to tighten, you know, the ability to tighten the screws, bear down, and get out of a jam, no matter who created it, is half the battle when you're in the pen. And the fact that I had zero, I thought there was zero chance that they were not going to have to give up at least one run in that inning. And the fact that, you know, he was able to pitch his way out of it after Bregman makes that great play at third, I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, it was. He pitched himself out of trouble. Always nice to see that. You wish that Presley would have been able to do that in the ninth inning. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Speaking of the NCAA stuff going on, we're giving away men's Final Four Fan Fest tickets presented by Capital One. Fan Fest begins today, or at least what we're giving away begins today, all the way until April 3rd, which is Championship Monday. It's over at George R. Brown Convention Center. Tickets are only $10. You can purchase them at the NCAA.com/Final Four, NCAA.com/Final Four. You can also get in free if you have kids 12 and under. If you have a Capital One card, Capital One card holders get in for free. You can find more information and the full schedule of events. Visit NCAA.com/Final Four or download the Final Four app. What do you think, Blankers? I was listening to Cal and Hannah on the Texans All Access podcast, Rock and Roll, with Mark Vandermeer. They also did a Q&A. I don't know if it was solely with Brooks Cabina, but Brooks Cabina is the one who published the Q&A with Cal and Hannah McMeer. I think it was all with Brooks. Anyways, what do you think Hannah is to Cal?
Commander-in-Chief.
Yeah, see, I'm trying. I think she's more of like his fixer, like the one that whenever he's struggling to find that right word or phrase, where she kind of like jumps in and like, yeah, this too. Like she's kind of like almost his press secretary.
Well, I would agree with press secretary, and also I would think that she wears a lot of suits because she definitely wears a lot of pants. Because I think that she is the more intelligent, cooler head that can prevail out of situations, and she's finally getting the opportunity to kind of voice her opinions, which I give her a lot of credit in terms of this new transformation of the organization and trying to be, you know, a little bit more fan friendly and transparent and handle things appropriately. I think that she is the brains of the operation, and I believe that if Cal plays his cards right and he's smart, that they should have conversations before they make decisions, and he should include her because I think she's intelligent.
I just don't want too much meddling. I don't want too much meddling with ownership, period.
From either one of them, right?
Either one of them. Yeah. Like, I'm cool with Hannah being Cal's press secretary when he's doing media, that, you know, she's right there because behind every good man, there's a good woman. Like, all that stuff is fine. I just don't want them to become owners who start meddling too much with what Nick Caserio is trying to do, with what D'Amico Ryans is trying to do. Ultimately, I don't think that's going to happen. It's not a concern of mine yet, but I just don't want them to overstep. I don't want them to meddle. Like when Cal McNair said, oh, yeah, I'm going to be more involved in this coaching carousel, I didn't love hearing that. Like, I'll be honest with you. I didn't think that that was a great thing. Now, I don't think that they are going to meddle. And, like, listening to Cal and Hannah, it seems like they're kind of more hands-off. They're not in every single one of these top 30 NFL visits that they're meeting with some of these, you know, rookie prospects. So I don't – it's not a fear of mine. It's just one of those things I'm watching closely saying, all right, don't meddle too much. I don't want Cal and Hannah making football decisions. Leave that up to Nick and D'Amico.
Look, I don't think you're going to get a Jerry Jones-type situation. I don't think you're going to get that kind of meddling. But I do want someone that has a clear thought process when faced with situations where, one, you should demand to be in the loop if you're considering trading your best player or making some kind of significant trade. And then two, understanding, like, you know, and whether you have people you consult with or not, but understanding the ramifications of any decision made before you make it. And then, you know, have a united front and say ownership decides this, or ownership is having this opinion, and have it come from the both of them. Because just leaving Cal out on an island to defend himself and fend for himself is a scary proposition, whether he's meddling or not.
I'm cool with that sort of teamwork. I want that kind of teamwork. I support that kind of teamwork. I don't need Hannah and Cal making football decisions. Now, in this Q&A, I found a contradiction between Cal and Hannah. Like, this might be one of those situations where Hannah kind of covered up Cal's mess a little bit. They were talking about, like, the importance of winning, et cetera, the urgency to win. And Cal says, quote, "We know we've got to win, so we can't wait." All right, there's what Cal says, which is like, you know, that's the company line. Like, you probably need to say that, sell tickets, that sort of thing. I think it's dangerous from, like, a roster-building point of view. If you're, like, if you're robbing from the future for the now with where the Texans are, you can't have that. But I understand saying that publicly. I really do. Hannah, on the other hand, though, Blanker says, I think that's something that is also worth noting that Cal has said. He wants to get back to continuity as well. With DeMeco, you know what you're getting. You know you have a long runway with DeMeco, and you'll have the continuity there to really build something there for a long period of time that's sustainable. So it's interesting you have Cal talking about the urgency, the sense of urgency. We got to win. We got to win right now. It needs to happen right this moment. And then Hannah's like, hey, cool down, big boy. We know DeMeco has a long runway, and we believe in the continuity to build something that's sustainable. I don't think both of those things are equal. I think those are actually two things on completely opposite ends of the spectrum. Because when you're talking about winning right now, and then Hannah McNair is saying we need to build something that's sustainable, whenever you're talking about sustainability, that's more whenever you're looking at the future as opposed to Cal's point of view, where he's almost talking about robbing from the future for the now.
And so exactly what I just got done saying, that's proof in the pudding that Hannah understands it. She gets it. She sees the plan. She's going to stick to it. She's right on board with what we've been talking about all along, which is the best way to have sustained winning is to not try to skip chapters in the process and try to do things the right way without jumping course like Cal is trying to do. Cal is trying to tell you to go trade for Lamar Jackson and then try and figure out the rest of the roster, you know, by whatever other means you possibly can. Whereas Hannah's saying, hey, we've embraced the suck. Now we're going to have another draft and we're going to continue to move forward, taking the baby steps we need so that once we get there, we'll stay there. I like this. I think this is the clear definition that Hannah's input has an impact and she should continue to have a say-so if these are the kind of opinions that she's bringing to the table.
Yeah, she's basically Cal's public speaker, which is totally fine. Like, she's a better public speaker than Cal. I love Cal. We know that. I call him Cool Cat Cal. I wish he was my uncle. I would love to hang out with Cal McNair and, you know, smoke briskets and ribs and play golf at River Oaks and, you know, do all of those
things.
Let
him spend money on you hand and foot like a good on his favorite nephew. That's great. But
play video games together.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I mean, having worked with Les Alexander and knowing what a loose cannon he could be, no matter how many bullet points you gave him whenever he was in front of the media and how many fires he created sometimes by the things that came out of his mouth, there is a lot of value to what Hannah can bring to the organization, not just by having the intelligence behind a quote like you just gave us, but also like in those press. I've seen her several times when the media is following them walking and Cal is babbling off and saying some things. And then she's right there to go, whoa, 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 wait a minute. What he really meant is, and this is what we're doing, this is what we're trying to achieve. She's cleaning up messes on the run. And that's something that they need. And I think that she is a huge benefit to the organization by doing so.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the Hannah exposure to Cal McNair. I like that, and hopefully that's something that continues. Just don't rob from the future for the now. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're at J-Bar M and Edo, the spot to be. Also, one other thing from this Cal and Hannah Q&A. They talked about Nick Caserio. What is the leash for Nick Caserio? What is his job security? Is the seat warm at all for Nick Caserio? Should it be? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.